Hello?
Hello?
Hi, dear.
Hello?
Hi, is this Dave? Can you hear me?
No, this isn't Dave. I'm just calling him now myself.
We're
just waiting to get on the phone, I guess.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. This is Dave. I hope you guys are doing great.
Yeah, everybody.
Thank you.
Super. What would you like to talk about before we do our seminar? I want to respond to one question that I saw repeated two or three times having to do with confidence. Remember from what we've talked about before, you don't need to be motivated. You just need to set a plan and stick to it. For example, if you plan to do something like start a coaching group, set the date and then back into it. You'll scare yourself into being ready. Here's a quiz I want to give you. This is in terms of confidence. This is sort of outside the scope of our subject matter, but it was in the body of two or three questions and concerns that some of you had, and I wanted to address it. I'm going to give you a quiz, okay? So be ready to respond. It's a multiple choice test, okay? This is a true story. A study was done by the Wharton School of Business. They surveyed several thousand professionals to determine what was the primary factor that determined whether someone would sign on for the services from the professionals or whether people would decline the services of the professional. And it was the same reason for both accept and decline. So what do you think was the number one reason that people would both accept or decline professional services? Was it years of experience, credentials, reputation, state of the economy, or the amount of the fee? What's your guess? Anyone?
Reputation.
Credentials. Credentials.
Credentials. Okay, that's a great guess. Yes, yeah. Anybody else?
Fee.
Fees, the amount of the fee?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say fees.
Okay, two for fees. Okay, any other guesses?
Reputation.
All right. That's a good guess, yeah. Any others? Okay, are you ready for the answer?
Yes.
It was none of the above. It was the confidence that the professional had in stating the recommendation and the fee. And confidence surpassed all of these other variables because that's what people buy, is the confidence, the belief in the professionals. Because remember, we make a decision at a midbrain level on an emotional basis first, then we move it up to our forebrain to make it make sense. And that's often several seconds later. So far and away, more than all of these others combined, people make a decision based on confidence. And do you believe in yourself, and do you believe in what you're recommending? And I would add the major thing, the primary criteria that I have in terms of whether I'll work with someone is, do I believe in them? Because I know if I do, they're both going to teach me why. So there's also a blog that I have archived in my blog section. There's some background noise. If you're going to mess with paper and stuff, could you mute? Because your microphone picks it up, you probably don't hear it. There's a blog with confidence is a state of mind, and that might be something that would be helpful to kind of follow up on this because we don't have a whole lot of time to talk about it. But stating the recommendation and the fee clearly and confidently far and away surpassed all the others. And think about when you go to a professional, you go to a doc, a dentist, a CPA, an attorney, a financial planner, after you talk about what your challenge is, what you want to do with a professional, what do? At the end, they make a recommendation, and ideally a recommendation that is clear and specific, that includes what they do, what you do, and what the fee is. Do it just as any other professional, and it will pay off.
Dr. Dave, did you say the blog was in under your site?
At my website, MentorPath.
Okay.
And there's a tab at the top called that says blog. Or you can just do mentorpath.com/blog and go directly there.
Thank you.
In the right-hand column, there are the titles of the different blogs that are archived. And this one is, you know, several down, and it's called Confident is a State of Mind.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. What else would be helpful for us? Any other questions or comments that any of you have? I know this is early, but we talked about the first four steps last time. We're going to talk about step five today, about mapping wellness strategies. How are you finding this in terms of strategically going about creating a system of listening to a story and understanding it? Any thoughts or questions about that? I know it's a little early to get an overview yet, but we've begun.
I think there's a lot of rereading. Yeah, it's a lot of rereading of the information as well, and kind of reorganizing thoughts after reading it to figure out how it's going to be best laid out and shared with somebody.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, and I know I'm compressing a lot of material into these four seminars, and that's my sort of conundrum, because I would prefer a true seminar where it's give and take and where we kind of have discussions all along, but then there's so much material I want to share with you that I feel like I want to put the material into the time period so that you have that, and then you can kind of let it marinate and mull over it. And I do recommend going through the exercises and work page yourself so that you have an awareness of what it's like if you decide to do this with a client to work with that and apply what we're talking about. Because as you know, what I'm talking about in the seminars doesn't reiterate what is in the workbook, and that's simply the workbook. Now I will mention I'm responding to two or three questions about this. Later this month, I think for the 23rd, I do a more extensive training for New Life Story Wellness Coaches Training. And it's a 12 seminar that's licensed and specially certified. So I wanted to answer that question that two or three of you have asked out loud. Later, I don't want to make it complicated now. Later, I'll send you some information about that if you happen to be interested. But just to answer that question, yeah, there is a licensed specialty certification for this where you can co-brand the workbook and be on a registry and all that. But we'll talk about that later. I really want to stick to what we're doing and not be distracted from that. Any other questions so far about anything we've talked about? Well, I will move on with the material then, and I want to save some time at the end. So if you have any questions, jot them down, or any comments or different points of view. I'm interested in your experiences as well. Okay, we're going to talk about step five today, map wellness strategy. Remember, we've already looked at the first four steps: recognize authorship of your wellness story, own your story, assess the plot and storylines, and decide what to change. So we're going to specifically look at mapping changes. There are a couple of exercises I want to highlight in the workbook, page 2.12 and 2.14, 14 steps to edit your story and 5 steps to revise a storyline. Now, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something that they're struggling with? They're experts on diet, weight, nutrition, yet they haven't changed. Many years ago, when I treated severe anorexics in a hospital setting, they each knew more about food and nutrition than me and my entire treatment team of 9 experts. Underlying causes are not always present for any problem. Often complex, multi-determined causes, though, are there, but a coaching approach is to look at all of this, to look at causes, feelings, history, only as information. We focus on the choice architecture of this moment, of what is the next best thing to do. At times, simply doing what is currently effective dissolves barriers. And people need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices, when decisions are difficult or rare, or ones they don't get feedback for, or when they have trouble translating it into understandable terms, or when they persist in recreating the old story, which etches it further in their brain each time. Now, what I want to talk about especially, there are six crucial elements to map change for this step. When you understand and incorporate each of the six, I think you'll have the outline to master a life story of wellness. One, regulate states of mind. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and then how we process information and how we respond. We each have a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and to know which state works best for what purpose. For example, a state of mind for creative writing is different than one for editing. Different part of the brain. Brainstorming versus completing a project. Different states of mind. When someone is in an emotional state, they can be marooned in their right brain, the feeling intuitive brain. The emotional brain can hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. So let's talk about how to regulate states of mind. I believe the most important thing we can do to achieve a success is to manage emotion and regulate states of mind. This is the key success factor for people I coach, from CEOs of national and multinational corporations to professional athletes and actors to professionals, to regulate states of mind. What do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the crucial success strategy of managing their states of mind. Using alcohol, drugs, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotion can lead to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you choose, determines the meaning you attach to anything you see, to any stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. That simple little three-step process says a lot. Your state of mind determines the meaning you attach to something. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. Think about this. One evening, you're at home having a great dinner with a partner, having a glass of wine, having a wonderful discussion. There's a little noise in the backyard. You probably don't even hear it. If you hear it, you just dismiss it. Okay, next evening, Wednesday evening, you've just finished the last episode of Criminal Minds. Don't ask me how I know that. You hear the same noise in the backyard, and you're alert. You're by yourself, and you're in a different setting, and you're alert, and you need to check it out to be sure. Same stimulus, different state of mind. The state of mind determines the meaning determines the behavior. So, since the state of mind determines the meaning we attach and the meaning determines behavior, by changing the state of mind, we change the behavior. Now, there are two primary ways to regulate your states of mind. One is physiology and the other is focus. Physiology is how you use your body. Relaxation, deep breathing, meditation as examples. Focus is what and how you focus on. From quantum physics in the brain, you get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns your energy field. What you focus on, what you pay attention to, determines your state of mind. The power is what you focus on. Now, questions that we ask, even when we're not aware of asking questions, determine what we focus on. A couple of questions we'll always ask, and not even in a conscious way. What does this mean, and what should I do? So if you have an habitual feeling you don't like, it can come from a repeated focus and questions. Why does this always happen to me? Presupposition is that you're in a passive position and ineffective. Why am I overweight? The focus is on overweight. The quality of your life comes down to the quality of the questions you ask daily. So change the question. Change the focus by asking a better question. You're always asking questions from the moment you wake up, although you may not be aware of doing it. If you immediately begin asking what can go wrong today, you've already begun a scenario that establishes a state of mind. So ask a better question. I did this fairly recently. I was asked to, a buddy of mine does a Vistage group, a group of CEOs and business owners, and two of the people in the group had had really difficult things resulting each from different reasons and vectors, a death in their company, and it was a constant preoccupation, one for about 3 or 4 months and one for going on 5 months, and it was something they and their organizations were having incredible stress about. And they asked me, she asked me to do a presentation to her, a workshop, a morning workshop to her Vistage group about dealing with stress. And one of the things that we did was I suggested that each of them, after finding out the first thing they think about is what's going to go wrong today or can I really do this, is to share with them the notion that when we first wake up, we're always asking ourselves questions, and the first things we think about, the questions we ask, determine a state of mind. So if the first thing that people think about will be what can go wrong today or all the bad things that can happen or being scared of all the repercussions, then they're going to be in a state of mind that's going to be stressful from the beginning. What I recommended that they do, and everybody in the group, but particularly keying on these two people, was to get them to write down three questions the day before or the night before, three questions that were empowering, that would put them in an optimum state of mind. In other words, to ask better questions and be aware consciously that they were doing this. To, as soon as they woke up and turned on their bedside lamp, to pick up the sheet with the three questions and answer them before they ever had their feet hit the carpet. Questions, I gave examples, but encouraged them to create their own questions. What will I create today that will be more powerful than I ever dreamed of and have fun doing it? And emphasized how our brains follow our focus, whether that's positive or negative. So to ask a question that would empower them, put them in an optimum state of mind. And then I asked for a report. At a week, both the individuals and their organizations had a turnaround in terms of, there were a couple of other strategies, but this was fundamental to both of the key players, to ask effective questions and determine a different state of mind. This is a power of focus. The best mentors, leaders, and teachers are the ones who ask the best questions to get us to use our own resources. People thought Goliath was too big to hit. David asked, well, if he's that big, how could I miss? Better question. Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't ask if people want to buy a cup of coffee or a latte, but do you want a concept of community, a third place between home and work? And now there are a lot of third places all over the world, as you know. So remember, you're already asking questions. Write down three questions that put you in a peak state, and each morning answer these three questions and feel the answer, see what happens. Now, let's talk about how to more systematically regulate a state of mind. I want to talk about mantras and self-regulation. Here's the story to set this up. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Robert Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage out of 217 teams in their division nationwide. So, during practice, Reed had his players develop a mantra before each free shot, a three-part component. One was a cue, and he suggested that it be two dribbles, a focus such as a phrase that they would repeat, such as relaxed and smooth, and the third part, the physiology. Remember, we're combining the focus and the physiology simply with a cue. And the physiology, he suggested, they take one deep breath of relaxation in and breathe out any tension. Now, additionally, he simulated game conditions by abruptly stopping a player in practice and asking him to shoot two free throws. Well, which simulates game conditions because you don't get to line up and be joking with your buddies and count the best of the 30. You're in a game situation. You're fouled, so you're immediately on tilt. If you're away, there's all the negative energy. And if you're at home, there's all the positive energy. The same, it's a controlled experiment in terms of energy fields. The same teams play the same teams an equal number of times. And away games, they lose almost twice as many as they do at home. So if the player made the shot, he got to take a breather. If he missed, he had to sprint around the court. In 2 years, the team was ranked number one in their division nationwide. So the three parts, a cue, two dribbles or some personal gesture, a phrase, the focus, such as relaxed and powerful or relaxed and smooth, and a deep breath. Now, since you ask, a mantra that I do before I do a workshop or a keynote is I put my index finger and thumb together on both hands, forming two little circles, and touch the two in the middle, forming a little infinity sign. At the same time, I have a phrase, like for a keynote, relaxed and powerful. And at the same time, I'm taking two deep breaths in, breathing in relaxation, breathing out tension. So in about 5 or 6 seconds, I'm in an optimum state of mind for doing exactly what I want to do. Now, mantras can be used in various situations to regulate states of mind, especially for emotional triggers that can instantly change the state of mind. And as I mentioned, some of my clients who are pro athletes and actors have used it to get grounded and centered for their performance. And they are especially aware of managing and regulating states of mind. So mantras can both calm as well as keep you from overthinking in a high-pressure situation. The number two element to map changes. The power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects that frequency. It's kind of like saying all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of hundreds of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, change the channel, change your thoughts. The bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over again. Remember, we get what we focus on because it aligns our energy field, not what we want. Now, quantum mechanics offers us some understanding of this. The quantum Zeno effect, Z-E-N-O. The mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. In other words, the brain rewires. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is way more effective than a problem focus. We know that in coaching. These brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality we see. New neuronal networks and pathways are activated when you focus on solutions. The already existing surgery is further etched when you focus on existing problems, even ostensibly for figuring out why and coming up with better answers. And this is why some people get stuck in therapy. Neuroscience validates the reality that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, but a focus on the awareness of choice. That's exactly what we do as mentor coaches. Now, the law of attraction is based in neuroscience. I think the second article under my articles tab on my website is about the neuroscience behind The Secret. Probably most of you have seen The Secret about the law of attraction. And simply stated, it's this. If you lay a nail and a paper clip side by side, nothing happens. If you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paperclip. Well, why is that? What happened? The molecules of the nail are aligned in the same direction, and it becomes polarized. It's the same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. There's more of an explanation with that paper on my website. In the film The Secret, the adage is ask, believe, and receive. Now, I think that's a little misguided, and here's my thought about that. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway, or it won't align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story that you want. So instead of ask, believe, and receive, which is a little passive, consider this. Ask, believe, create. The ABCs. In fact, my favorite grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. What she said? Wishes don't wash dishes. Now, she's also the same grandmother who said, and I offer this to anybody who doesn't like marketing as I didn't, and I had to go back to her words, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Now, the paradox is that we do not attract what we want, but we attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Now, this is one kind of explanation about how it works. Your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. It's sort of like a print or a negative in the old style camera is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. The power of focus is whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing. I want to get out of debt. The focus is on debt, so that's not going to work. I want to lose weight. The focus is on weight and overweight and deprivation, so that's not going to work. Here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray put it very simply. Your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make it true. Notice which people worry about illness, which talk about pains or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities instead of problems. That's exactly what we do in coaching. Desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you want, what you don't want falls away, kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. The pen is in your hand to write your story. Now, the energy we're talking about is not the energy of stamina, as in tired versus refreshed, but that of energy field, this invisible, very real connection. Think about how you can instantly read someone's energy field. They walk in, you can tell whether they're warm and inviting, cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic. Quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there is a collective field, and you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called it the unified field theory. Basically, he said that the human mind and body is a bundle of energy and interacts with another person's bundle of energy or with the larger energy field of a group. This is how we can read people, focus on choices, determine the flow of our future. So, how do you tap into this collective field? When you're grounded and centered, And these are physics terms. When you're grounded and centered, it opens doors and creates synchronicity. And a popular term, and this has been studied in the last 20 years in psychology, is flow, or in the zone. Your choices set this flow into motion, just as other choices called derailment of this progress, this process, like asking questions that empower you in the morning. You set your day in motion. When you wake up happy, you're excited about what you'll do that day, when you ask yourself empowering questions. Days when nothing goes right can usually be traced to an instant when you became disconnected from yourself, such as a bad feeling or a disturbing thought, or even just stubbing your toe when you get out of bed. You create your state of mind and set yourself on a particular path. Now, the law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good things or bad things. You keep coming back to what you run away from. You attract what you resist because you engage it with focused emotion. So the most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. Now, most focus is outside awareness. The challenge is to target the specific outcome that you want. So this one way of looking at that is look at all the things that you focus on that you don't want and make a list as you notice thinking about them. This list will more immediately cue your radar for early recognition. Then, each time you notice thinking about something, stop and think about what you do want. And be specific about what you do want, not what you don't want in disguise. You know, like, I want a reliable car. Focus on the idea the car may break down and need repairs. I want a relationship in which I'm treated well. That focuses on the expectation that you won't be treated well and you'll have to reverse it. Let's do an exercise now. We're on mute, so you can say this out loud. What I'm going to say a phrase, and I want you, after each thing I say, I want you to say out loud, "Your wish is my command," and to be aware of how you experience this. So yours is, "Your wish is my command." Okay? "I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I've ate healthily all day. I just worked out." Now, think about what your experience was after each of these. "Your wish is my command." That's your unconscious. That's articulating your unconscious, because when you say "your wish is my command," you are articulating your unconscious, and you're going to make true whatever you just said or whatever you just focused on. And think about when your focus was on tired or late or overweight, if there wasn't perhaps a negative or a heavy feeling or a tired feeling, when you thought about doing things positive and enhancing, how it shifted your state of mind to something quite different, something lighter, something more positive, something more engaging. Now, thinking this way isn't magical. It requires discipline. This is why most people don't have spectacular results. But doing something for 25 to 30 days and not reverting back to the old pattern can be enough to establish a new pathway in your brain. William James, the father of American psychology, said, "Wisdom is learning what to overlook." And a final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, resentment, inferiority, false pride. The other is good. It's joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, compassion, and faith." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his granddad, which wolf wins? The old Cherokee simply said, the one you feed. 3, visualize changes. And here's the initial classic study that began looking at visualization and the changes in your brain that you make by rewiring your brain with visualization. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into 3 groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. Another group, 30 minutes daily at free throws. Another group practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws for at least 5 minutes daily for 30 days. At the end of 30 days, they were tested. The first group, no practice, 0% improvement. The second group, actual practice, 30 minutes a day, 24% improvement. The third group, practiced by visualization only, 23% improvement. And since then, there have been a number of studies that show that visualization only far surpasses actual practice because you don't have to do a near miss and recalibrate every time. You can practice in the perfect way, and each time you do it, that grooves your brain a bit more each time. On brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as with actual shooting. So, create a vision. Then look back to see the path to get there. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision. Every image draws you toward its conclusion. An image is like a goal. If you create a negative image, such as, I can't dance or I'll look goofy if I really cut loose, this will be, and I have no trouble coming up with some of these examples, this will be a destination that your brain will draw you to. If you picture yourself as not able to dance, when you go to your party, the image says, I can't dance. You're going to stay in that zone of self-image. You create your experience. You can create something else instead, or at least all of you can. Create another image of yourself and live into it. So here's an example of a focus and visualization exercise. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight. Look at those pictures in your head daily. Write out your ideal body weight range. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body. Now, remember, it has to be your body at ideal weight. You can't lose weight and have Alicia Keys' body, or it can't be your body 25 years ago. Don't focus on losing weight. Don't focus on fat thoughts like slow metabolism, hereditary body size, slow thyroid, or the spirit of Great Aunt Sally that channeled the curse of large thighs. Think about each of these things that I mentioned is a positive focus about what you go to. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. When you actively are present, each bite is a choice, and you can ask, is this choice in my best interest? Even visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. You know, that tells me that whenever I get Russell Stover chocolate-covered cherries and put them in the freezer and they start calling me, a good preemptive strike is to not get them and put them in the freezer because I have imagined what they look like thoroughly assembled throughout my body. It's not pretty. Think and feel as though your desire is manifest. Create your body as your life intentionally. Remember the ABCs. Ask, believe, and create. Now, there's more information. I included a chapter in the workbook section about the old art and the new science of the visualization. So there's some information about the art and the science of a vision that I won't get into here. But the art of a vision is to look at and create exactly what you want. An example, in the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. And the science of a vision, just briefly, is that Recent PET scans have confirmed several things about visualization. Visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain, and the brain assimilates a mental picture, whether the stimulus is actual from the optic nerve or imagined. The brain can't tell the difference between a mental image and an actual image. Replays of the visualization, such as repeating the vision of having actually attained the goal, programs neural networks and neuronal pathways to more strongly etch the experience. Mental visualization of a complex movement can actually improve performance. And PET scans have also established that thoughts result in physical changes in your brain. So when you program your unconscious, you actually create a future memory to live into. Your brain can't tell who conjured it, you or reality. The more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be. Now, here's the key. You do not make the brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it in your story. Otherwise, it won't register or it gets extruded as noise. And this is what we'll talk about in the last step, the P, program new identity, because this is a crucial aspect. The most common force, probably the most powerful force of the human psyche, is that unless we incorporate what we do and the changes we make into an evolving and transforming identity, we will revert back to the way we were before after we do the change. So this is why we have to program changes into how and who we see ourselves to revise the model of what we operate on along with the changes. And this is something we'll talk about how we do in coaching more about next time. And this may be why, for example, 95% of people who diet gain back their weight plus 1 or 2%. They don't reprogram their body image. For example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live into that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity rather than belonging to somebody else or something that you just attribute to luck or circumstance or just something you did once. And you know, for example, that by simply picturing a danger, you can trigger the entire body response of fight or flight. Now, while your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. So your conscious mind has to incorporate an evolving story to include and assemble the imagery as part of the story. Otherwise, unconscious messages will delete access to or believability of the imagery, or a simple conclusion, well, that's, you know, I did that, but that's not the real me. So the key elements are these three. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly. Secondly, consciously incorporate the new vision into an ongoing story to be metabolized as part of yourself. Otherwise, you'll lose the vision. And third, be very specific about the experience of the vision, of achieving the goal successfully. Now, a footnote here, write it down. Research on memory tells us a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory, then it's gone, unless you write it down to review. Visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it. In other words, to live into it. Here's an example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. On two occasions, he had broken 100 by one stroke. He had had two 99s. Everything else was in three digits. To preserve his sanity, he learned to visualize golf. Every day, he would select his favorite country club. He saw himself getting dressed in clothes, drove to the club, got out, warmed up, stretched, smelled the trees and the grass, made the stroke with his entire body, walked to the ball. As he was released from captivity, playing golf in his mind 7 days a week for 7 years. His first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision of mind over matters. Number four in mapping changes. Insight changes the brain. If we were to look at anyone's brain with an fMRI scan, at the moment of insight, an aha experience, and we catalyze those experiences in coaching, at the moment of insight of an aha experience, a complex new set of neural connections is created. Three different parts of the brain light up on fMRI scan during these aha moments. This moment of insight activates centers in the brain to release different neurochemicals. Contrast that with someone is given information, a directive, or an order. Nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. Now, as important as this insight-induced change is, the sustained attention is what hardwires it into the brain circuit. Number five, take action. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," by all means paint. Then that voice will be silenced. That's from Vincent van Gogh. The world will not pay you for what you know or for what you intend to do. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize, they're all important. But payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. May not be perfect, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from their mistakes and producing results. This is why a group of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the first semester of community college owns a lot of real estate on the west side of town. The most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick to it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life separates the good from the great. At 211 degrees, water's hot. One more degree and it boils. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. 141 publishers turned down a guy with a really unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He decided to publish it himself and sell it out of the back of his car. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. And six, identity transformation. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized in its new pathways. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. This is the P on the roadmap. We're going to talk about this much more next time. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or circumstance. So, what I want to conclude with is to summarize steps four and five. Decide what to change from last time and map the changes. Now this is in your outline, but this brings it into some action steps and synthesizes these two steps. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors and not on problems in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying a problem won't solve it. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to lay new mental maps. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, intellectual plus emotional. Facilitate insight rather than give or follow advice. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas. You'll see clients doing this regularly, and that's why I have an agreement with each client, as I mentioned, that I can interrupt them at any point, and they can interrupt me at any point. Remember that the power is in the focus, and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Focus aligns and directs energy and efforts, so you want it on successes. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. Put it into action. And finally, think about your new experience and evolving self. How your new experiences require thinking of yourself, your identity, in an evolving way. No longer the old story. Okay, we're now in discussion mode. We have a few minutes. Your thoughts and questions, any clarifications or follow-ups from anything that we've talked about? Is this making sense to you?
This is Anne. I would say yes. This particular session made more sense to me. And I've read The Secret several times, and I just kind of, although I'm not great at the concepts, I try to live that way myself as well, and help my kids that way as well. And in terms of, you know, your mind carries everything in your day. Whatever you're thinking is what's going to lead you through your day, and that can help. I like the very last line you were talking about was someone's story where it's evolving, and it's no longer the old story, which really hit me that would be very telling to a lot of people. It's like you have that control, and you just have to rewrite your story.
Yeah, the only way to fully give up an old story is to be solidly in a new one. And then it works like your lab. You know, when you get up to move ahead, your lab is a memory. You can always stop and reestablish it, but it impedes forward progress. So the new story simply replaces the old story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been said that Jung said this actually first, some problems can't be solved. They simply have to be outlived.
Mm-hmm.
So we create new ways of looking at things, new ways of doing things, and it's not necessary to engage the problem to sort it out and find a solution, because the problem was devised at a different time. And we have software that was tailor-made for an earlier time and a place. So right now it's going to take looking at things in a present way, a present context, new creation, but that's what activates, stimulates our mind and our brain to vault it into more creative and synthetic ways of going about it. And that's what we do as coaches. Yeah, so thanks for your comments. Was there anything else you wanted to say or any question from that?
Mm-mm. No, thank you.
Thanks for adding. Appreciate it. Other thoughts, questions, or things that you'd like to discuss or expand on? Here's an exercise that we can do. This is something, and I'll send you a copy of this after we meet probably tomorrow. But take a sheet of paper, clean sheet of paper, and draw three vertical lines so that you have four columns. In the first column, put a cue or stimulus, emotional cue or trigger. Second column, put usual response, and that would be more behavior. Third column, put mantra. And the fourth column, put ideal behavior. This is a neural conditioning, reconditioning chart. And I've used this with a number of clients. Let me tell you how I developed it, because it'll give you the idea of it. And I've used it with, you know, everybody from executives to athletes to professional coaches who I do mentor coaching with. I was working with a woman who, very accomplished, very, very high-functioning executive woman, and she noticed that every time she went home to her family for a major holiday, she would usually go home one big time a year, either Thanksgiving or Christmas, that she, even though she had resolved to to not get in fights and to not do stuff with her siblings, with her parents, every time, every holiday, she would, you know, she would last a little while, but then her resilience would be down, and she would be in, you know, a horrible situation with him, and, you know, doing fights. So what I asked her to do was to draw this chart, and to schedule a brainstorming session with herself, to set aside at least 30 minutes. That was an appointment with herself. Nothing interrupting that, no calls, nothing, where she could really get in a state of mind to really reflect on and observe what happened in her family. Not to recreate or get in any of those states, but to really observe, kind of like a fly on the wall, to be an observer, and notice all the different cues or triggers that would set her off and what her response was each time. You know, for example, her dad would roll his eyes a particular way, and that would set her off. Her mom would say some kind of phrase to her. Her sister would do something, and each of those would set her off, and there was a specific response to each of those. So what she did in this session, and she came up with almost 20 different cues or triggers that were emotionally triggering to instantly change her state of mind, to move into that reactive mode, the behavior in the second column. So the next thing we did was I asked her to schedule a brainstorming session with herself and to put down in the third and fourth column to create a mantra. And I gave her the example of Robert Reed, and I gave her the example of what I did, but emphasized that it be her mantra, that it be her cue specific to her, and her focus and her physiology, and to write down for each of these different triggers what an ideal behavior would be. Now, the idea behind this in the first and second column is to code her radar for possibility to recognize these cues immediately as they occur, and instead of causing a state change, to have that automatic and repetitive behavior in that second column, part of that altered state of mind, is to recognize it, to instead move to the third column to get grounded and centered. And doing that repeatedly, because it'll take work and begin to, in order to have pre-planned what her ideal response would be. And she worked on that and had it in good place. And after the first major holiday, she said, "This is amazing. This is the first time I've had a good experience with my family. It wasn't easy, but I know it's going to get better and better. And this is a model that I'll use in my work as an executive. This is the same model I use with pro athletes and performers, as well as other professionals. There are a number of things that create a state change that can be recognized, and then someone can get grounded and centered and move into an ideal response. And this is a neuroconditioning chart. I'll send you my copy of it so that you can use it and see how it looks on another page from where you drew it. So hopefully that might be helpful to you. And if there are any questions about it, we can pick up here next time. So we're out of time. I'll send that off to you. Thanks very much, and thanks for your input and the ongoing input that you're having and the emails that you send. I appreciate that, and it's helpful to me. I look forward to picking up with you right here next time.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.